Welcome to Important Not Important. This is episode 6, and I'm Quinn Emmett.
And I'm Brian Colbert Kennedy.
Awesome. This week, we are talking to volcanologist, geologist, and California District 25 congressional candidate, Jess Phoenix, about her unexpected political career, her biggest challenges so far, and how she's helping to pave the way for more lady scientists to get involved in civic life. The pros and cons, the lessons learned. Brian, what's something you learned today?
I don't know that I learned this exactly today, but I really do like and hate that I think about so much later in my life, all the different things that I could have and thinking back would have studied in college, but I didn't. And like the conversation today just made me think of it.
What would you have studied? Wait, what did you study?
Theater.
Okay. Yeah. Check.
For, as you so sweetly brought up last night, was for a total of 9 months.
That's all right, man. You know, everybody's got their thing. I mean, I'm sure the collective number of classes I went to adds up to about 9 months.
Yeah.
Fucking maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, it was just cool. It was, you know, like talking to, which everybody will hear in a moment, talking to Jess today about how she, you know, she decided like, oh, well, I'm just going to take like these 8 classes and 8 different subjects and like start to see if anything sticks. And then it did. And now, you know, now look where she is.
She's going to save the world.
It was a really, yeah, it was a really cool thing to hear. And yeah, not that I just learned that today, that I regret not going to school more, but would have been cool, man. Would have been cool to be a Jess.
She made this point where she was like, oh, and then that semester I decided to take other stuff. And she rolled off immediately the list of all the classes she took that semester. I can tell you maybe 4 classes. If you ask me right now, name 4 classes you took in college.
Oh, God.
I don't know. And I did okay, and I loved it. Maybe too much.
Heard.
Anyways, so actually, to be clear for our Los Angeles-based listeners, Jess is running for District 25 against Steve Knight, which just...
Yeah.
Monster. District 25 is just north of LA, which means you can go stump for her. You can go knock on doors. You can make phone calls, whatever it takes. She needs our help and other folks like that. She is running a grassroots campaign and she is awesome. And people like her should pretty much be making all the decisions.
Yeah. She speaks for, you know, normal people, regular people who are interested and who aren't rich and like who want, you know, the country and the world to be happy and good for everyone.
And
she was great.
Not burning. She really was great. I'm really pumped for her. I hope we can make a difference here. She needs 20,000 votes to win the primary.
20,000.
That's her math.
Of the 700, just over 700,000, right, in her district?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. 20,000 votes to win the primary. And Brian's 2 of them. So
I literally count for 2.
Yep. Look, so side note, if everything comes out on schedule, this is the first episode after our sort of trilogy of shows explaining how action-minded conservatives are doing their best to bring other conservatives on board. I thought that was pretty interesting. I thought it was pretty fascinating stuff. You, Brian?
It was unbelievable. I don't like, you know, I think of anyway, like, here are these people, they believe in climate change and they're Democrats. Here are these people, they don't believe in climate change and they're Republicans. And to learn that it's not that black and white.
Yeah, we got our asses handed to us.
Yeah, it was.
And it's not who I expected to talk to, but the dominoes fell. And I think it really matters because those 3 folks we talked to and all the other people that are doing similar jobs to them, they've got a hell of a tough job, man. But it is maybe the most important and significant battle we're facing, because if we can even start to win that battle, to get some of them on board, some of the decision makers to go along with all these young conservatives who are up for environmental action, we might survive.
Maybe. And if we do, I mean, you know what that means.
I get to be a robot. Right?
I just want to be a robot on Mars, man, because with my friends.
Right? Because that's the thing. Like, we are in a true race against time. But if we win it, I mean, and to be clear, Earth's going to change, right? Things are going to...
Yeah.
We're going to hit 1.5. We're going to try not to get to 2 because that's bad news. Past that, it's bye-bye time.
Yeah.
But if we can, there's so much awesome shit happening that we talk about in the newsletter every week. And we're going to start to talk to some of those people on the podcast. We just obviously want to get to this first.
There's so
much awesome stuff happening.
Yeah, the beginnings of what is happening, it would be so terribly sad if we don't get to see all that stuff out.
If you didn't have to super worry about climate change every day,
right?
What's the number one thing you're most excited about that's going to happen in the next 25 years?
There will ever be anything more exciting to me than space exploration. I just want to do... I'm not going to fucking go to Mars, obviously, myself. But
why not? Why not?
I'm a 34 years old.
You're 40. What? You're only 40.
Come on. They need to, there's like the kids that are born today are going to go to Mars.
Could go.
If I can go, that'd be great. But I want people to be there. I want to at least be here on Earth, not burning alive or underwater, watching people fly to fucking Mars on a rocket ship. That's what I want more than anything. Also, I would be a robot if that was an option too.
Would you insist on a round trip ticket or would you go one way?
I would 1,000% do one way. And maybe that would give me a little advantage because, say I'm whatever at that age, 60 years old, and they're like, all right, listen, you can go, you've old man, but you're not coming back. And I would say, okay.
Two related questions.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it before.
Yeah.
How disappointed would your mom be if she found out you bought a one-way ticket? Go.
I might not even be able to go if I picked up the phone to answer when she hears about it and what she has to say to me.
Good news is when she calls, I think there's a delay. And actually, there's a two-week period every 2 years when I don't think you can talk to Mars.
Oh.
Or maybe it's Moon. I can't remember.
Oh, but there is something like that. That's true.
So she couldn't get you for those 2 weeks.
Yeah, that'd be a good 2 weeks out of the, entire rest of my life that I'm gone.
Is it worse when she's actually giving you guilt or worse when you're giving the guilt to yourself? Knowing what she would be saying.
No, it's worse when she does it. Because she's just the best. I don't want to hear her be sad.
Yeah, but you probably hear her be sad a lot, right? Because of the life
because
decisions.
Of my decisions? Real good, Quinn. Yeah, you know what? I have.
All right. We had an awesome time today. It's been a heck of a week. Jess is amazing. And let's go find out some more about her, shall we, Brian?
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Our guest today is a volcanologist, geologist, and congressional hopeful Jess Phoenix. We're going to get to the bottom of what's the best chance for success for a female scientist in a longtime Republican stronghold. So let's find out who she is. Jess, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Quinn and Brian. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're very, very excited to have you, Jess.
It's great to be here.
So just a little preface, note on tone. We have a lot of fun, but we do want to dig deep. We're going to talk a little bit about your history and how you got to where you are today, and then dive into our main topic of the day. And finally, kind of a note on our ethos. We're big believers in questions, but questions that don't provoke action are basically just philosophy, which is great. But these times call for action, and that's where we're trying to go. We're trying to provoke for our listeners on every level. So we're going to get some context from you, the why of you, the why of the change facing our listeners, and then progress to some actionable steps that our listeners can take, something that will inspire them to get to work at whatever level, whatever party they subscribe to, even though they're mostly our party, which is fine. That's great. So Jess, two questions. Who are you? And instead of asking what you do, we like to ask, why are you vital to the survival of the species? And I encourage you to be bold and honest. You're here for a reason.
So, well, who am I? I mean, that's kind of an existential sort of question, but I'll give you I'll give you the more down to earth answer because I am a geologist. And so down to earth is sort of where I like to live.
Nice.
But no, I'm a scientist. I'm a lifelong curiosity lover. I mean, I love learning. So basically any kind of inquiry, any kind of question, that is who I am. I like to question everything and explore the world around us. So, I started out in school thinking I was going to be an English major, ended up with a history degree and have a geology degree. I like to write. I am really into sports too, which a lot of people, most nerds don't have that reputation, but I love sports and not so much watching. I like playing. I am a really proud
what sports? You can't just gloss over that.
Oh, okay. Well, I still ride horses, which I've done since I was 8. And, and I play softball on a women's, competitive fast pitch team, here in LA. So,
It is.
I've been playing that since I was a kid too. Well, I started out playing baseball, cause they didn't have softball where I grew up. Sure. And then I switched over and, yeah, I've been doing that forever too. So, those are what I do. And then, you know, I mean, I've used to do a bunch of other sports. I mean, pole vault to, you know, ice skating to everything in between. So I just like to get out there and be active. So that's a big part of my personality too. I think it's probably why I come across to a lot of people as very energetic. It's all that pent up, you know, athlete energy from back in the day.
Sure, totally.
And then I do have to tell you why I'm vital to the survival of the species.
But it's important. You got to stand up.
No, it is. It is. And actually, I like it because it really plays well into my scientist brain. And so I would say because I am very adaptable. I'm not going to be passing on my DNA. My husband and I aren't having kids. So what I try to do is show the young people I work with through my nonprofit. I work with a lot of college and university students and a lot of elementary kids. I try to show them that being adaptable is how we meet the challenges that our species faces. So basically it's adapt or die is my philosophy. And that's kind of where we are as a species. So because I'm a big proponent of that and I spread the word, I think that's why I'm vital.
I love that answer.
Hell yeah.
I love that answer. Brian, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I have a question, Jess Phoenix. In looking, you know, researching you online, I've found you as Jess Phoenix and as Jess Palayez. Is that
Yeah, Palayez. It's actually my middle name now. Yeah, it's Jess Palayez Phoenix is my whole name.
Oh, okay.
So my husband, Carlos, his last name was Palayez when we got married. And so for a few years, we were both, you know, he was Carlos Palayez, I was Jess Palayez. Living overseas and working all around the world like I do, I realized pretty quickly that very few people can pronounce Palayez or
like,
spell it.
You mean
correctly.
Like how I just pronounced it?
Brian just butchered it, so perfect.
Well, his wasn't the worst. Trust me. We've gotten Pleasy, Pelaz, you know, Palayez, like, I mean, everything. It's and in Australia, it was next to impossible when we lived there. So, in California, we have a little better luck, but it's a Colombian last name. So, my husband's half Colombian, half Mexican. And so, you know, we thought we both do a bit of work in the public eye. And so we thought, well, you know, let's have a name that we can keep that as our middle name. And then let's have a last name that we share that, you know, means something that we like and has good connotations and is sort of our own thing together. And so we chose the name Phoenix together.
His last name is Phoenix.
It's still there, but Phoenix is the last name now.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. I was wondering it cause it sounds so badass. I figured you changed it cause of that.
It was more just, you know, it also began with the letter P and, we like the connotations. I mean, I was a history major, like I said, in undergrad. So, you know, Greek and Roman mythology are something I've been really into since I was a kid. So, you know, there's the mythology of the Phoenix. It's such a cool thing. And plus I liked it when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a nice place.
Nice. Right. Sure. Plus X-Men. I mean, it's endless.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's many connotations. That's true. X-Men was pretty amazing. I was a devotee of the Saturday morning cartoon as a kid. So yeah, there is that as well.
the costumes from the cartoon were just perfect.
I did not miss when you mentioned Voltron in your introduction video on Blueprint Earth. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. I do things like that from time to time. Today I was referencing Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on Twitter. So, you know.
See, you're the best.
You know, I have found a lot of folks, even people our age, don't know Voltron. Is it?
That's crazy. That is from our generation. I don't know how you don't know Voltron if you're
I know. I feel like everybody's like He-Man, Transformers.
Also good.
Right. They're all great. But Voltron was, I don't know.
Oh, God. Voltron's
Voltron was awesome. And really I feel very sorry for anyone who hasn't watched Voltron. And so I don't know how well it holds up, though, because I haven't watched it recently. Mm-hmm.
You gotta be
so I don't know if it's like
sometimes
relevant.
It's better just to hold
on.
I made a Oregon Trail joke the other day and nobody in the room knew what I was talking about.
How?
What? Oh my gosh. You have to ford the river and your ox dies. I mean, that's what happened.
Like, Timmy died of dysentery and nobody had any idea what I was talking about.
Well, we all know. Yeah, it sounds like Brian would have too.
Oh, I would have picked it right up.
That's very sad. So anyways, all right. So how did you get into working in the earth, on the earth, investigating the earth from a history major?
Yes, it's a good question. I was one of those people who probably should have taken a year off between high school and college, but I didn't. And so I kind of stumbled through undergrad and I knew I needed a degree, but I didn't know really in what. And I had a semester that was a little rough and I didn't go my way. And so then the next semester I thought, at least one for some people. And so I decided I was going to take classes that I was just interested in the next semester. And I wasn't going to, try to just load up on major related courses or anything. And so I ended up one semester taking intro to poetry, drawing, history of Native American peoples, astronomy, and geology. And oh my gosh, the geology class, the professor he's a really nice guy, but he has a really boring lecture style. And most people were asleep for the class, cause it was a 4-hour class, from 6 PM to 10 PM on Wednesdays. Oh. And yeah, it was pretty brutal, but I couldn't get over how much I loved what we were talking about, because geology really explained why mountains are where they are, why oceans are where they are, why, there's so many whys that you can answer with earth science. And so that was it. I was really hooked, but I didn't have enough time to switch majors. So I just took as many geology courses as I could. And I took one at a neighboring college where we had a National Science Foundation funded research expedition to Death Valley and Panamint Valley, California. And Panamint is the valley next door to Death Valley, so it's very similar. And we were doing something really cool, which is cosmogenic nuclide dating. And so that was basically using cosmic rays. Yeah, cosmic rays bombard the Earth all the time. Mm-hmm. And we can actually, they're recorded in the rocks. So we can use the rocks to figure out how long they've been in certain places. So we were researching ancient lake shores, and when the rocks were covered by water, the rays couldn't reach them. So you could kind of decipher when the lakes were at their maximum using this technique. So that's what I started doing, and it was 11 days. Actually, I think it was close. Yeah, it was almost 2 weeks. No running water, no showers, no bathrooms. And I had never even been camping, so I was I learned fast, and I realized when I was digging a 6-foot-deep hole in 107-degree heat in Panamint Valley, in March, that was my spring break. I was like, okay, if I really like this, this may be a career I could consider. And and here I am. That was 2004. So 14 years later, if you asked me to go do it again, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
I mean, that's really trial by, you find out real fast between taking a college course from 6 to 10 p.m., which I guess the only thing worse than that is 6 to 10 a.m., in college, and then being thrown into that sort of field work, it feels like it's pretty black or white. You're not like, I think I like this. It's either you love it or this is not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. You learn very quickly. And, that's why, now that I run this nonprofit, I'm not running it at the moment because I'm running for Congress, but, the nonprofit I founded with, the one I founded with my husband, Carlos, Blueprint Earth, take college and university students out to do hands-on field research, because there aren't a lot of programs that teach students how to do field research that are affordable. And so if you don't catch a lucky break, like I did, and, get into an NSF funded thing, you don't have access to it. And it's really important to me that students from all backgrounds have a chance to go out and learn about the world around them, because they're the scientists of the future. And I want to make sure that field science remains a vital part of our research program. So that's what I'm doing. I'm bringing kids out to the desert and saying, look, here's how you go camping. If they don't have equipment, we get the equipment for them. Mm-hmm. We just got some grants that are going to allow us to give some stipends to students for the first time, which is great.
Amazing.
So yeah. So most of them work. So they have to take time off of their job, and a lot of them work and they provide for their families. So, because a lot of our students are from inner cities or from low income backgrounds. So we really want to make sure that it's not a hardship on them to come out, and if we can alleviate the financial stress, we try to do that too.
I love it. I think it makes so much sense. And geology really is one of those things where there's such an opportunity to blow minds. The first time you take somebody out there, even if they're like, I don't know if I'm up for this, and you can really show somebody very quickly how old something is, it puts things in perspective, and that's awesome. And that's great that you're making it more available to everybody, because it is a crime that it's not. I I don't even know if the NSF has funding anymore at this point. So it's great that, that folks like you are out there doing that. Yeah, we'll get to that. Don't worry. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I figured.
So great. Trial by fire. You love geology. You started this awesome program with your husband. And now you're running for Congress. Tell us what made you say, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do it myself.
You know, it was realizing that, you know, Trump has issues. Like, we know Trump has issues. Whatever party you're a part of, you've got to realize the man has a lot going on that is not your typical president. That's about as kind as I can be. You know, that being said, I mean, that's a lot of motivation for certain people to run. But for me, it wasn't him so much because he's just one person. It was the culture he's bringing with him that attacks facts and attacks the truth and evidence. And it basically just says none of these things that are objective matter. It's all subjective. We can twist it for our purposes. And I had a real problem with that because, you know, as a scientist, my career is focused on finding out what facts are, you know, making observations about the world around us, testing hypotheses. It's all very logical and rational. And we make sure that what we do is based in evidence. And I thought, well, you know, why aren't our policymakers trusting facts and evidence? And they're, you know, this is a top-down thing that's happening. We see Trump at the head of it, but people like the representative I'm challenging, Steve Knight, you know, he has been a climate science denier, and he's called California's climate change preparations foolish. You know, that was his word, not mine. And it's like you cannot exist like that. And so, you know, really, it's that whole assault on facts and the truth that I could not accept that. And I think, you know, who better than to champion evidence-based policymaking than a scientist?
No one better. Yeah.
Sure. There's no fake news when it comes to dating rocks, you know, at its most basic. Like you said, it is as evidence-based as it could possibly become. And you, that is such a fundamental thing to you. Like you said, it makes so much sense for someone like you to be the one that's opposing this, this ridiculousness. So, all right. So that is Jess Phoenix in a nutshell. Am I right? Am I missing anything?
You know, unless it's like really obscure stuff. I mean, I rescue animals, so that's a big thing. I guess that's not obscure, but that's just like, I'm looking at my window right now and I see two of my rescue. Well, I have two rescue horses right now and I'm looking at them. So they, you know, they reminded me, oh, hey, we're here. So, my husband and I both rescue animals, and we have, dogs, cats, birds, and horses that we've rescued. So that is what we do. And with all of our extra money and our time.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These days there's limited free time, but you know, it's actually really good on the campaign trail to have all the animals around, because, you know, we have one, the most recent rescue is a Chiweenie, and I'm not a Chiweenie person, but she was so damaged when we got her that like, you have to be patient with her. Like she teaches you so much patience, and it's like, it's just so nice to come home and see how much she appreciates us being around. So even if you have a rough day, even if the Russian trolls are getting on my nerves online or whatever, I have a sweet little Chiweenie who is very excited to see me regardless. So that helps.
Animals are the greatest. They're the greatest. It's the best. I've got three tiny kids I had two small dogs, and I've got one dog, and it's just the best. You know, the kids, they kind of don't care how my day went, but, you know, I walk in the dog in the door and the dog's like, I don't care how your day went, is you're amazing. And it's just, it's the best.
Yeah.
They're the greatest.
I'm Googling pictures of Chiweenies and they're just adorable.
Look at the ears on that thing. They're amazing.
I just sent Quinn an image of one. Big, big ears. Like, who's that guy from, that little guy from that movie? All right.
Good. Yep. Good talk, Brian.
Next one.
Okay. So we've got Jess in a nutshell here. So let's set up a little more context for today's topic question. So, some of these numbers have probably changed a little bit, but they can't have changed too much. In 2018, 106 women hold seats in the U.S. Congress, which is about 19% of the 535 collective members. 22 women serve in the United States Senate and 84 serve in the House. Women comprise approximately 51% of the U.S. population, which is not 19%. So needless to say, it's not very equal. It's not very representative. That's going to change by some degree for sure this year, by November. a tab in December said 369 women are planning on running for Congress, the most ever. And on the other hand, or I guess if you're Jess Phoenix, scientists, it's just as bad. Bill Foster at Illinois said he thinks he's the only PhD that's not a political scientist in the House. So Jess, you are the future. You are very much the tip of the sword here and other women scientists like you. But it's going to be an uphill battle, I'm sure. So with that, with that for context, our question this week is, you know, we're focused on you, but we also want to make this a, you know, this is the biggest year of any of our lives, I think, if this is something you really care about, which you should, but it also, you know, needs to be a model going forward. So the question is what's the best chance for success for a female scientist in a longtime Republican stronghold? And how can others currently or in the future, young women who might listen to this, use your model as a blueprint going forward? Because there's a lot of Republican strongholds. We know that the Democrats have failed down the chain for the past 10 years or not even tried. But many of those white men Republican strongholds are under attack from the left for the first time in eons. And obviously, most of them are, again, white men. So what is your model? What are you finding most effective? What are you failing at? What are you working hardest on? And how can we duplicate that, or at least you know, set it up as something that other folks can model going forward?
Well, you know, I think that the really important thing in this particular race is that just to note that things are changing. And, you know, it's not just around the country. Right here, we have actually now in my district, in the California's 25th, we're Northern LA. We're kind of like the rural part of LA. It's LA County, not LA City. And we have, it's a really sprawling district, and you know, it's probably, I think it's 70 miles maybe across. I think that's about accurate. So it's pretty big. And what has happened is we've seen a real demographic shift, in the last couple of decades. And now for the first time, we actually have more registered Democrats than Republicans in this district. And Hillary actually won it by about 7%. And so my opponent Knight, he just barely hung on. And when I've gone canvassing door to door, just, you know, to do general canvass work, just saying, hey, we're with a local Democratic club. You know, we're here to talk to you about, you know, are you going to be voting next year? What's your plan? What are your most important issues? If we ask, you know, do you know Representative Knight? People either say they don't know him or they know his name and that's it. Very few of them actually know what his votes have been. Mm-hmm. And so what I've been doing, what I've been working really hard to do is show a couple of contrasts. I think contrast is the key word, because he is very much your traditional politician. Like, his dad was in political power in California. He was a state assembly member. And so Steve was able to get into state assembly and then Congress on his dad's name recognition.
Must be nice.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's probably a good thing if you got it, but he hasn't done anything that would distinguish him. And when you tell people that he has a 0% score lifetime from the League of Conservation Voters, it kind of blows their mind.
Right. Zero.
Zero. Yeah. Like, you have to try to vote that much hard against the environment. Yeah. So people are really shocked by that, because California, even our Republicans, for the most part, are pretty concerned with the environment, because
especially
it is such
like yours.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are mountains around here. We have mountains, we have desert, we have ocean. Like, I mean, not ocean in my district, but we're right near the ocean.
Sure.
You know, it's something where, you know, wildfires are a real problem here. We were part of that big, you know, that wildfire outbreak that happened November, December. And, you know, this is something that we live with, and the environment, it kind of gets up in our faces sometimes if we're not prepared because of earthquakes. So just being environmentally aware and being conscious of that, and then realizing that Californians really value our outdoor recreation opportunities too. And we have a beautiful state and people love to take advantage of that. So when you have a representative who only votes in the interest of big oil and, you know, fossil fuels, because he is beholden to them, sure, money wise, you know, that people really see that and they go, oh, okay. Yeah, we don't like that. And then, and he really proved it, because he actually voted for the GOP tax bill, which removed the tax deduction for wildfire victims, natural disaster victims. And he later voted to allocate funds to the disaster relief, but he did make that first vote. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how can you do that in our community where we were actually affected by this? So,
well, it just puts things into perspective very quickly.
Yeah. It's the contrast. I mean, that's what we're doing. So that's, you know, that is how I think we're going to see the path to victory, is by talking to people. I mean, it's, you know, it's communicating that contrast. It's getting out, shaking hands, talking to people online, engaging young folks, and letting everybody know that, yeah, their vote is going to matter more than ever this election. Because like you said, this is, could be the most important year of our lives. I mean, I've been alive since 1982, and, you know, we had some pretty momentous things happen between now and then. I mean, Challenger, the wall came down, you know, the dot-com bubble, 9/11,
yep.
You know, these are momentous things, but we are at an inflection point, I think, culturally. And this is where we have a chance to make a stand and say, we want people of integrity leading us, not people who are beholden to big money or people who are in it solely for their own self-interest. And that is something that I tell everybody when I talk to them. I say, I don't want to be a career politician. This was not in my game plan. Like, it's not like I've ran before and I'm trying it again because I have to get through. It's not like I see this as my next step on my career ladder. I don't. I mean, this is a complete, you know, U-turn for me career-wise. This is really just me saying I need to solve a problem and I can't do it alone. I need a group of people to help me do this, because, I mean, that's the only way anything ever gets done is large groups committed to working towards social justice and change and doing the right thing.
Yeah, that works for me. So what are the obstacles you're running into mostly out there? I'm super curious. Is it name recognition? Is it that you've never been a politician? Is it your sex? Is it your job? Is it none of those things? I'm curious. Again, I really want to, you know, break this thing down so that we can look at it and tell folks, because there might be some young girl or young woman who listens to this and says, "Well, shit, I want to do that," and we want to help them out as much as we can here.
Oh, definitely. I would say, so the number one issue is, I would have to say, the dark money and the corporate donors who are involved in politics. The rules we have in place right now favor the rich hardcore. And, you know, wealthy people can't be the only ones dictating who gets into government. And that's been the case. The system, you know, with Citizens United, it's been worse than it was before. But right now, the system is really set up to allow people who have a network of wealthy donors to get into office, and that's it. And, you know, that's why we have so many lawyers and business people. They have those networks. And when a lawyer runs, he or she says to their partners in their law firm, you know, and the associates, they say, "Hey, I'm running." And a lot of law firms allocate money into people's paychecks for them to make donations to candidates. So it's, you know, it's like, that's just, the system is set up to allow people of money to get there. And so for me, I mean, I've done business. I've raised money for my nonprofit. It hasn't been on the scale of what we need for a congressional race these days, because they're costing, you know, $4 to $5 million. I mean, it's obscene. Jesus. And that money goes towards advertising. You know, those TV ads, sure, that we all love to hate. So it's, yeah. I think that's really, the system's just broken. And that has been the biggest challenge, because what I've seen that's really effective is engaging with people on social media. And just as an example for how different my campaign is, mm-hmm. Knight, who is a sitting Republican representative, has 4,400 something followers on Twitter. And he's not very active there. He doesn't engage with people that way. And I have almost 40,000 right now just on Twitter. Facebook is like 20,000 or something.
How many people are in your district?
You know, in the district total, there's about 750,000. That's standard. All districts are drawn about the same. So, you know, it's a big number of people, but then you figure not all of them vote. Not all of them are eligible to vote. And when you start breaking it down, it's for the primary, we probably need to get about 20,000 votes. So for me, it's about, you got to turn everybody you interact with into an ambassador for your campaign. And I think that's the way that candidates need to succeed in this day and age, if they're not coming from wealth. You know, I think that's sure. the main thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm certainly not coming from an area where I can, you know, a position where I can dump $1 million into my campaign. I can't do that. I think I've contributed like $2,000, you know, and
sure.
that's been,
sure.
that's a lot. But you know, that was, that's about all we can do too. I've got student loans and so does yeah. my husband. And, I know that's a familiar issue for a lot of people these sure. days. So if you want to run and if you don't want to wait until you're in your 60s or 70s to have accumulated enough wealth to do it yourself, then that is if you have that opportunity. You know, we need to have publicly funded elections. We need to have campaign finance reform happen ASAP. So I am very committed to overturning Citizens United and to working on that because mm-hmm. I think that all the other problems that we see, like let's say gun violence, you know, the gun lobby is super powerful and influential. You know, the fossil fuel lobby, same thing. Big pharma, same thing. It is all back to money and the fact that people are able to buy politicians' time and influence. And I think that that is just a huge problem. So
sure.
if we decide as a society, we really want a democracy, a true democracy, and actually have anybody be able to participate in the process, we have to make sure that we make sure everybody has voting rights who is entitled to them. You know, we have to protect the Voting Rights Act and, you know, shore that up again. And we've got to make sure that people are able to run for office who come from not wealthy backgrounds.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a huge advocate of limiting funding and also term limits and age limits, but that's an entirely different discussion that I could go on about for an hour. But it was already bad before Citizens United, and now it's incredible. It's out of control. I spent part of the time while you were talking looking up Steve Knight's donation.
Oh yeah, he only gets a third from individuals. The rest come from you know, corporate dark money, GOP money. So
sure.
It's he's not of the people. He is
not
of the system. Yeah.
Do you have any idea? I saw you tweeted something last night this morning about your grassroots donations. How's that going?
Oh, it's fantastic. We need more, obviously. Yeah. So don't, anyone listening, yeah, if you want to donate, please do. But, you know, I have donors who give $1. I have everybody from $1 up. And, you know, the funny thing is that a lot of folks who are running for office will have tons of people who do what they call max out, you know, so they will max out, they will give the maximum amount that they are legally able to donate, which is $2,700 per election at the federal level. Right. So you can donate, you know, once for the primary, once for the general. So that's a total of $5,400. I only have 19 donors out of almost 5,000 donors. Only 19 of them have contributed $2,000 or more.
Wow,
so
that's crazy.
Yeah. And I've raised around $250,000, I think. I don't have the hard numbers in for last quarter yet, but yeah. You know, it's, if you think about it, that is a lot of small donations up.
Brian is searching through his wallet right now. It's not pretty. It's not pretty.
No, but, no. Yeah. You hold on. I got like $80 in here.
Well, that's really great. So what else? What else are you running into out there? What's been the most surprising thing to you knocking on these doors?
Well, you know, when you talk to people, it's amazing the connections you can make. And so it's been really positive in terms of finding common ground with people, even if you come from a very different background. And actually, one of my favorite little things that's happened is I was out canvassing for one of the local Democratic groups, the Democratic Club of the High Desert is their name. And I was canvassing for them about a month and a half ago, I think. And I knocked on a door. I was with my husband. My husband's Latino, named Carlos, you know, full disclosure, right? You would expect
right.
that. But,
sure.
And I think I said he was Mexican and Colombian before, but anyway, we were there and nobody ever thinks I speak Spanish. I mean, I'm redheaded white girl, but I do, right. I speak Spanish. And so we knock on the door, it's a Latino family. The gentleman comes out and he's speaking to my husband in Spanish. And then I'm just listening at this uh-huh. one, because those houses, I often don't get a chance to talk. They just want to talk to Carlos.
Sure.
But we asked him what his number one priority was. And we asked, there were five options. It was like immigration, healthcare, the economy. Oh, there was something else. And then, education or environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got like five little kids screaming in the background, you know, a car, you know, that he was working on in his front driveway. And, you know, he's working class guy. And he said the environment.
Wow.
And
damn.
And so then I jumped in and I asked him why in Spanish, and that sort of surprised him for a minute there. But then he started talking to me and he said, because it's his kid's future. And he understands that, you know, even though he doesn't have,
hero,
you know,
to be clear.
Yeah.
It was super cool. And he was like, even though I don't have a lot of education, I do know that we have to have clean air and clean water, and our kids need that. And if we don't have that stuff, our kids can't have good lives. And I was like, wow, he gets it. This guy gets it. And so it was somebody who, you know, we don't share a native language. He's an immigrant to our country. He's a working class dude. And yet he's like, look, I understand that we have to protect our planet because we're all here together. And that has been one of the most amazing, surprising parts of this is he's not alone. There are so many people who I can relate to about different things. And I've even had folks who they are Trump supporters. They were like, they voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. They voted for Steve Knight. I've had people come up to me and say, I'm a Republican, lifelong Republican. I am really disappointed in how this has played out. It's not what I thought. And so I appreciate that you tell it like it is. That you are just here. I can tell you care, and I'm going to vote for you. And I'm floored. I mean, it's happened more than once. And I think it's just that people are so starved for something genuine and for something that isn't, you know, hasn't been run through 800 focus groups and, you know, tested in six ways from Sunday. Sure. They want people who genuinely just care. And I think that that is probably been the most heartening aspect of this whole process for me.
Fascinating. That's really interesting. Those type of people just must be like catnip for you. I mean, that's...
Well, it's a balm, I guess, because I will tell you, right-wing trolls are really fun.
So how much do you have to deal with that? I'm curious.
Well, a lot, actually, because if you're running for public office, you can't just block people. Because they could potentially be your constituents. So, which is funny because Steve Knight has blocked several of my supporters even before they started supporting me. They would ask him questions, how are you going to vote? And he'd get mad and block them. So that's not a good example. And I'm hoping that I know people are challenging. I think is what I heard is that they're challenging Trump blocking people in court. So we will see. But for the time being, I don't block people unless it's truly a bot and they're like promoting Viagra or something on my page, then sure. I block them.
That's not a bot. That's just Brian.
I'm sorry. Oh, Brian.
I'm trying, but he's got his own computer.
It happens.
It does.
But I will try to engage with people. And even if I know they're deliberately just trying to provoke, they're just being antagonistic. You just have to appreciate that at least they're engaging and then you just move on. And so you kind of develop a bit of a thicker skin. Although I will say, you know, I'm human and it's not fun. Actually, the one that stuck with me a little bit, and I know that means somebody will do it to me again, but that's fine. I'm over it now. Trolls, just FYI. Uh-huh. I've had somebody one time, they just said, wow, she's a piece of ass. And I went,
Jesus.
Okay. Like not a hot piece of ass, not a sexy piece of ass, not a, you know, an sure. ugly piece of ass, just a piece of ass. And I was kind of like, wow, could you get more dehumanizing than that? I don't sure. think so.
Sure. There's so not even an adjective there.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like saying she is a person, but it's like doing it in a depersonalizing way. So, you know, I kind of went, ugh, that's weird. You know, like that's just the fact that you would treat someone like that. And I know that other people get it far worse, particularly people who've been doxxed, you know, or swatted, sure. I guess is the other thing. And it's just brutal. And people leave social media, they stop engaging, and I can totally see why. But sure. I think now more than ever, it's really important to look for the good things, like the people who, you know, come and talk to me and say that they get it, because people you interact with in the real world are just, it's just a different sort of thing. You can see a little bit more about what makes them tick and they can see what makes you tick. And so I think as long as I remind myself of that like, these are real people, unless they're bots, but they're real people sitting behind keyboards. Like I try to tell myself, you know what, maybe they have a relative in the hospital. Maybe they just lost their job. You know, I try to humanize them by remembering the people I interact with on a daily basis, because otherwise, you could get sucked into the negativity. And I try really hard not to do that.
Sure. How do you break down your day? How do you break down your week as far as spending your energies?
Well, you know, a typical candidate will spend 8 to 12 hours a day making phone calls to wealthy people for money. Yep. So usually if you ask a candidate, they'll say that. But, you know, because my campaign's grassroots, doesn't work that way. I spend a good amount of time, you know, because I have my phone out all the time. So I will engage with people online kind of throughout the day, all day. Mm-hmm. But every day is different. You know, I will have, like yesterday I had office time with my staff, and it was just a lot of game planning, logistics stuff. And then I had debate prep because we had a forum that evening, yesterday night. So this, you know, sometimes you have a forum, sometimes you have like a meet and greet, sometimes you have an event where you just get to say hi, you're not like the speaker or anything. Right. And sometimes it's just like, hey, we're going to go to this middle school, we're going to go talk at this high school, you get to meet students, you're going to go to a nursing home or a VFW, or, you know, it's, or you're going to speak at the neighborhood council meeting. And so it's something different every day. And I try to go to, you know, anywhere from 2 to 6 events a week, you know, just depending on the week. It's busy. I mean, it's more than a full-time job. And then you have staff members too, and it's more than a full-time job for them. And so a lot of them are young because it's, you know, it has to be kind of high energy. So I have to say that it's given me a whole new appreciation for the older folks who campaign, because it is very intense. And you'd expect it to be, but you know, I'm just glad that I get to do more going out and meeting people and writing things that I want to share with my supporters and with hopefully new supporters. You know, most candidates are really just locked in a windowless room making phone calls to donors. So I'm glad that I get to kind of break that mold a little bit, because I've said to everybody I've met, you know, I don't want to do this if I can't be myself while doing it. So that's been a big thing, big part of my campaign.
Yeah. I mean, and probably not. I mean, sitting in that room just must be life sucking. And for someone like you who has never aspired to be a politician and doesn't aspire to be one of these 85-year-old people who I genuinely don't understand how they're still in Congress, finding out that running means sitting in a room and making phone calls for 12 hours a day.
Especially if someone like you who's an adventurer and an explorer.
Right. Would just be so demoralizing. And we'll probably drive some folks out, some good folks out, and make say like, oh, this is not worth it. It's God, the campaign financing is such a nightmare, because it's a sports analogy. It's like we can rip on all the baseball players who did steroids in the 80s and 90s, but eventually you had to do them to keep up with everyone else.
Yeah. And biking okay. too.
I mean, Jesus, what, 2004, everyone's like, oh, it took all of Armstrong's awards away. I think 2004, 2005, they ended up giving the trophy to like the number 9 guy, I think, because everyone else Whoa. Was doping and there was just like, oh, well, that means everyone's doing it. And if you don't, you physiologically right. cannot keep up. And that's the problem with campaign finance. As much as I wish it would go away tomorrow and everybody got a public allotment of money, a small public allotment of money, you know, we have to keep up. So it's unfortunate that you don't have the same dark money funds, but at the same time, thank God you're not beholden to those people and organizations, but you're enjoying and being proactive about saying, okay, well, this is my hand and I'm going to get out there and do what I can. And I'm, you know, going to get more. How much are you going to give, Brian? $25 donations from folks.
Come on. I said there was at least 80 in my wallet.
She's going to send an envelope of cash.
Look for the very specifically $83 donation. That'll be from me.
Excellent. I will do that. So that's how you do it. I mean, the only way we're going to fix it is if we send people to office who actually have real messages and are doing the real hard work of talking to people and learning the local issues and understanding the community on a deep level. I think, you know, that is kind of the change that we need. It can't just be who had the biggest ad campaign. You know, it really can't be that. And it can't be. You can't be, you know, people running and just equivocating on everything and saying, well, today this and then tomorrow something else. Or, you know, we see a lot of that. We see a lot of people who are, they're great at being politicians. You know, they'll say what you want to hear, but that is not the authenticity that our country needs right now in our leadership.
Right. So let's dig a little bit into your environmental policy thoughts. So obviously you support reinstating the environmental regulations that will try to save this planet that Mr. Pruitt's doing away with every morning when he wakes up. Have you ever considered anything like a carbon tax to replace those? Any thoughts on stuff like that?
Yeah, you know, I've actually looked at carbon tax as a way to help pay for Medicare for All in conjunction to that, saying taxing, potentially taxing people who pollute, not people, but, you know, companies that pollute. Sure. And, you know, that's something that I'm exploring. But again, this is stuff where you need hard data, like a lot of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say first and foremost, we've got to restore the protections that we had already. I mean, you know, as of, it was, I think by October, Trump had already overturned like almost 30 regulations. I think there were 29 of them and a bunch more were in progress. Like they think there were a total of 60, that he was trying to get rid of. And these are basic things. These are like, you know, like drilling in, you know, offshore drilling, the Arctic, you know, hunting grizzly bears and wolves, in Alaska, protecting whales and sea turtles. And I mean, these are basic things.
It just feels like it's literally just for shits and giggles. I mean, the hunting the wolves and the bears, it's like, but why, what does that have to do with anything? Like, just why? Because somebody walked into his office and was like, you know what I'd love to do? Shoot a bear.
Well, you know, Don Young, the representative from Alaska, he's been in Congress. It was 52 years, maybe 53 or 54 now, but he's been there forever. So that goes back to your term limit thing. I don't have a set, you know, term limit should be X, but I definitely think we need to look at that because we get people in there who are so out of touch with what is going on currently that you have this stagnation of knowledge. And so you don't have people who are willing to explore new policy options. And, you know, that's what we need. The country is constantly changing and evolving. So is the world at large. So we have to be there and be ready to meet those challenges by saying, hey, look, you know, is carbon tax the right way to go? Is investing more in solar and clean energy? You know, is like, what are we going to do? And actually, one of the like the big fundamental building blocks of my campaign is making my community here in Southern California the global hub for green tech research and development. And we actually can do that. We have the manufacturing knowledge from being an aerospace manufacturing district for a long time. And so we have the skilled workers for that. And we also have skilled knowledge workers too. We have JPL really close by and a bunch of great colleges and universities. And I think that we are primed and ready because we have the space, we have the technology, and we need to be a leader in green tech. And what better place than right here? It's just a matter of getting federal funding dollars back home.
As far as the green tech goes, any thoughts on vocational training, things like that? You know, I know besides the solar panel tariffs, I think they said wind technician is the fastest growing job in America. Solar industry growing 17 times everything else. It just seems like let's point these people in the right direction. Let's give them a chance for things that are already growing.
No, I disagree completely. And, you know, I think it's fantastic because I've worked in natural resources. When I lived in Australia, I worked in coal for a bit. And so I did it. I was a geologist. My job was to basically to figure out if they were doing their production in an environmentally compliant way and in an efficient way. So I did that. And that's how I can say, like, look, I see what it is. There is no such thing as clean coal. And, you know, Australia leads the way in the greener extraction practices across all of the natural resources. Like they have pretty tight protections for their environment. And, but it's still a problem. These industries are particularly coal. It's dying out and there's a good reason for that. I mean, I've told people that, you know, the Stone Age didn't end because we ran out of stones. I mean, the fossil fuel age isn't ending because we're out of fossil fuels. It's ending because we have a better option. And, you know, so that to me, like I have this boots on the ground, real world experience of saying, look, I've seen it. I know what it is and we can do better. And so, I mean, a lot of the people I worked with had at best sixth or eighth grade educations because they work with their hands. They're very skilled mechanics. They're skilled drillers. They are, you know, they have a lot of skills and they learned those either on the job or through a vocational training program. And I think that we here in the U.S., we need to be elevating the vocations. We need to be elevating carpentry and electricity work and, you know, plumbing. And of course, then move that into green tech manufacturing because without those skills, I mean, you can't just draw something on a computer and make it be real. I mean, yes, 3D printing is a thing, but you know, we're not going to be 3D printing everything. So we need to have people who can actually put stuff together and understand things like how the machines work. And, you know, a lot of the knowledge that we have right now, surprisingly enough, in agriculture actually comes from immigrants who are working in agriculture. So, I mean, it's just understanding that you can't have like, we can't solely exist in, you know, online.
It's wonderful. Technology is great. Technology got us here in a lot of positive and negative ways, if you want to count the industrial movement as positive or negative. And there's some wonderful stuff coming down the tube. But helping to train these folks, whether they're just young people who don't want to go to college or most likely can't afford it, because that's broken in another conversation, or they're coal miners or out of work, or it's just folks who didn't go to a good public high school, because that's another conversation, especially here in Los Angeles. But, you know, the opportunities that are there to train them into these industries that are exploding, that one, like you said, people who know how to work with their hands and already know how to work machines could fix our crumbling infrastructure, for example, you know, and two, could help save the planet. You know, you can apply it from so many different points, but in a district like yours that has so much room and has so many immigrants and has so many folks who are used to working on the land and has these facilities, it just makes sense to say, hey, come here, you know, we'll teach you whichever one of these things you want to do. You know, we can help both make you money and help you pay for your family or a path to citizenship if you need it, which again is another discussion. Or you're just a white guy who's out of work. Maybe you worked in coal, or you never thought about it, or you just need a job. But there's so many opportunities to apply it. And I remember seeing somewhere a few years ago, and I'm going to mangle this, and I've tried to find it before again, and I can't, but someone was saying how one of the fixes to college, or at least maybe community college is the better version of this, is stop with these. I mean, I was a religious studies major and it applies to nothing, you know, basically I've done nothing with that. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I'm a pagan. but I just wanted to learn about the world and how people see it. But you know, what would have been more productive is if majors were based around fixing problems or taking something on, because majoring in climate change action doesn't mean you have to build weather models and climate models. We need someone to do that, but we need also people schooled in ethics and liberal arts and things like that. And trying to turn the ship around and apply those things, I think, let people apply themselves to things they love. Like when you showed up in the desert, we're like, holy shit, I love geology. How can I play that? But there's other, it can't just be geologists, just like Facebook can't be tech nerds, because we all saw what happened there. You know, it's not great. You need people working on the same thing, but who are going to ask, should we be doing this? Is this the best idea?
Different questions. I mean, it's true.
And those people are valuable. And I know places like Germany are really succeeding with the vocational training. And I don't know, I don't want to keep harping on it, but you know, seeing something like that happen just north of us would be really exemplary, because you look at a place like Los Angeles, which has, and I'm not sure what the homelessness situation is like up where you guys are. We're only about 10 miles down south of you. We're here in upper LA. But you know, homelessness is out of control. I love Eric Garcetti, but it's out of control. It's so bad. So many of them are vets, and there's such an opportunity to turn these people around and help everybody in that case. You know, if there's a magnet like that, where you are with you leading the way, I don't know. It feels like everybody wins. Anyways, that's more than enough out of me. I think Brian had a few more small questions to you before we try to close this thing out.
We're wondering what the big actionable questions we can be asking of our representatives and of our candidates like yourself.
Okay, so that is a really good thing to ask, because people want to actually be able to do something.
It's
all well and good. But we've got to be able to hold people accountable. The main thing to do is, I would say, to ask questions about why they're voting the way they are. You know, question that, not just, you know, what are you going to do about a particular vote? I mean, you should do that too. Everybody should be calling their representatives and, you know, texting them and all the different tools we have now to get in contact with them. But we should be saying things like, okay, you're taking this vote, but why are you doing that? Do you have donors in that industry? Do you have, you know, do you have affiliations with this? Are you going to be consulting in that industry when you leave office? You know, it's like, sure. It's following the money. And I think that is what you can do. And then they may blow you off, but then when they do, if they do blow you off, if they give you a form letter or a standard response or something canned, share that with your friends and get the word out that you have a representative who isn't doing their job. And if you're lucky enough to have one who is, then also ask them, question them too, because they need to stay on their toes. Just because they're in office doesn't mean that, you know, their responsibility to you as a constituent is lessened at all. No, in fact, it's heightened because now they are acting as your voice. So you definitely have to question them about their motives behind their decisions. And, you know, I think that that is the important thing, is to know that even if you don't agree with somebody on 100% of things, because really the only way to agree 100% with a candidate is if you yourself are the candidate, you know, we're going to have differences. Even sure. Your most perfect dream candidate will have differences from you. So the thing to remember is if you agree with them on most issues, or if you agree with them on the issues that matter most to you, then support them, you know, back them. And of course, challenge them and tell them things that you think that they could look at differently, and they could, you know, examine and prioritize. And so it needs to be a dialogue. And if your representative isn't having town halls or isn't having office hours when they're in the district, if they're not making themselves available to you, keep pushing for that, and then sure. Publicize it if you can, whether it's just your friend group on Facebook or if you have a big Twitter platform or a blog or something. Get the word out there. Hold them accountable, and everybody needs to be engaged. And that means teach your kids, teach your friends, like just engage in the hard conversations. You know, I know everybody doesn't like to talk about politics, but start doing it. And if somebody disagrees from you on something, ask them why. Just sure. Try to understand, be curious. And if we all can carry that innate curiosity that we have as kids with us as adults, then we're going to be doing a lot better as a society.
Absolutely. And I want to give a quick shout out. There's a startup called Town Hall Project, which has worked for the past year, like so many of these startups that didn't exist 12 months ago, to really aggregate every representative and senator's town hall time, whether it's virtual or in person. And it is an easy way to connect with your leaders and do exactly what Jess is talking about, which is to just say, why? You know, why? And whether it's good or bad, why are you doing it? And it seems like you said, boy, that would make for a better society. Act like a kid. All my kids do is ask why. And it can either drive
yes,
you crazy.
Yes, I agree. Kids are the best.
Kids are the best. You know, I told this story in a previous episode. You know, we're two things. My 5-year-old is so into the environment and just cares about everything, probably too much. Poor guy. He's going to get his heart broken every day. But, you know, he asked where paper came from. And I told him, and he's like, well, guess I'm not using paper anymore, because he loves trees. And we were riding in our minivan.
Amazing.
And, you know, he asked about, I don't know, he saw a tailpipe or some smog or something. And I told him, and by the time we got out of the car at baseball practice, it was, well, I'm not riding in the minivan anymore, Dad. And I was like, well, shit, man, no, we need to be able to get places, but I get what you're saying, but the why, it matters so much. And if we can just grasp onto that, yeah, you're right. We can, you know, and if it means chasing down some of this money, then hell yes. Have you run into anything in particular that's been difficult as a female besides the online nonsense?
Besides the trolls, yeah.
Yeah, that's been the bulk of it. Otherwise, you know, I've worked in male-dominated industries my whole professional career. I mean, I started working the sales floor at Best Buy when I was 17, and I was the only woman on the sales floor in that store.
Damn.
And so I was thrown right into it right away. And ever since then, it's been, you know, especially field science that is male-dominated largely. And so for me, it's really normal being in a male-dominated space like politics. But I think it's just when I actually step back and I look at the toll it takes, particularly with the Me Too movement going on and people being very outspoken about the abuse that they've had to deal with, it's very exhausting to be, well, one, ripped on for being female because you don't have a choice. Like, you are born a certain way, and then you know, if that doesn't fit your gender, then you change that these sure. days, because that is that's valid. But I think that it's, you know, you're born a certain way, and whether that means you're fat, or, you know, you are female, or you are skinny, you know, too skinny, sure. and people constantly bug you about that. Like, you have some things about yourself that are just external things. And it's hard to see people degrading you for something that is just who you are. And so I think really it's just sort of, it's probably common to a lot of women running now, but you just have to make time to be nice to yourself and do things that recharge you. And, you know, for some people that would be like, you know, spa day. For me, it's time with my animals or going and playing a sport, you know, going to the softball batting cages, like that usually fixes it for me. Sure. But you have to remember to do that. And I don't know if that's gender specific or not, but a lot of the issues you deal with are, you know, people making comments because of gender. And so, you know, for me, that's, I'm just like, okay, you know, what? This is what I'm doing. And, you know, particularly troubling are the ones that you get from people who are, you know, I'm very much pro-choice, and you get a lot of people constantly, you know, calling you baby murderer, et cetera, et cetera. It's funny because, you know, when you are female, you have that that ability to have bear children that that men don't have. And so it's kind of interesting because a lot of people will try to speak about something that they have no knowledge of.
Yeah, weird,
and
right?
It's that sort of bridge that you're like, some days you can cross it, some days you can engage, and some days you just go, you know what, I'm just going to leave this for later. Because sure. It is exhausting. It's exhausting to have people attack, you know, your fundamental person. But at the same time, there's so many great people, like I said before, that you just have to look to the people who get it and who are supportive and who understand and use that to recharge.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, we've taken just a buttload of your time, Jess, and we really appreciate it. And obviously, thank you so, so much. We were wondering, who else should we talk to?
Who are your allies out there? Again, what we're really looking to, obviously, look, our listeners are pretty darn progressive. They might not be the nerdiest, like the three of us, but they've probably taken more action in the past year than they ever have. They're pretty fired up. They might not know all the issues, but they know of them. You know, they might not know where that iceberg is breaking or when autonomous cars are coming exactly, but they're excited about it or terrified. So, you know, who else can we talk to help you know, provide a catalyst for action for these folks because they're hungry for it?
Well, I have some really interesting suggestions for you. One is a friend of mine and a supporter of the campaign and an actor. His name is John Billingsley. He played Dr. Phlox on Star Trek Enterprise, the TV series.
Yeah.
And he has been, he has played so many other characters. People know him, like he was in a million things. He was in True Blood, and I think he's been on CSI, and like you name it, he's been on it. He was in The Man from Earth. He's been in a lot of things. John has started a group called PUSH, People Unwilling to Sit on Their Haunches, and it encourages activism in whatever area interests the participants. So he's working a lot with the Hollywood Food Coalition. I there's a formal name for it. I cannot for the life of me remember what it stands for, but he's gotten a lot, very involved in feeding, you know, the hungry in LA. And he also is encouraging activism on all levels, and he's supporting my campaign, and he would be a hilarious interview for you. I will say that. So if you can get him to agree to do it, he would be great because he is somebody who's come to activism later in life and from a very different background. And he's using his unique skill sets as a communicator to make a difference. So definitely recommend John. And
awesome.
I can give you his contact info, you know, later.
Yeah, we might rely on you for the hookup, but literally all of that sounds amazing. I've literally just been sitting here thinking about talking to him about TNG the entire time. All the rest of that sounds great. I'm sure it's fun.
We're starting a new podcast to just talk about TNG.
Funny. Yeah. No. He is the best. He's the best. And I would suggest him. And then there's actually a voice actor who you should talk to as well, Tara Strong. She has done so many different voices, like Timmy from Fairly Odd Parents. She's a voice in the new My Little Pony. She's been on Teen Titans. I mean, like you name a cartoon and she's been a voice in it. And she is a very, very big activist. She's been involved with the Women's March, with United We Dream to help the DACA recipients. She's involved in amplifying candidates around the country who, you know, have causes she believes in, including me. And Tara is a fantastic person. So I would also be happy to introduce you to her too.
Awesome. Rock and roll. Who out there on the civic level is kicking ass? Who would you like to praise? Who's an inspiration to you as you're getting into this nonsense?
Okay, so Danica Rome, you know, the transgender woman who won the seat from the guy who was like Mr. Homophobe in Virginia.
I'm from Virginia. I still spend half the year there. It's just incredible. She's unreal.
Yes, I love her. I supported her campaign. I think she's amazing. She's an incredible voice for the LGBTQ community. And she is the proof of concept that we can do this by focusing on issues and by being genuine and by talking to people as people. And so she's amazing. And, you know, I'm part of the LGBTQ community as well. And I just have to say that it was inspirational to see her run and to see her win. And I think that I'm not alone in and thinking that, you know, someday it's not going to matter, you know, if what your orientation is, what your gender is, what your ethnic background is, what your religion is. Someday I think we can get there where we're just going to be seen as people. And I think she's part of that wave towards, you know, making that a reality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's when you see that happen, you go, oh, this house of cards is coming down. It might take a little bit, but that someone like her running, much less winning in Virginia, which isn't the reddest state, but still did not happen 5 years ago, much less, 10 years ago. It is a hell of a sign. It is very inspirational. So let's sort of summarize what our listeners and progressive folks in general and ladies, and even more so lady scientists or doctors or anything, all of the things we need more of. We often ask this question, if we had more female scientists in charge, would we even be in this place? And the answer is probably no, obviously not. So we want to kind of summarize what they can do to take action. And again, correct me and just yell at me if I've misspoken on any of this, but it seems like if they're running, get online. You know, you got to get over the trolls a little bit. Technically really can't block them. And don't be afraid to run a grassroots campaign from all angles. Sounds like you believe in having a real message, which I don't know why that sounds so unique, but it is, and learning the local issues and what people care about. And I think that really matters so much going forward, especially when it comes to the environmental stuff. You know, it's climate change is affecting everyone, but each region and state and city is going to be affected so differently. The self-care, be good to yourself, take care of yourself. Like you said, whether it's some aggressive swings in the batting cage, which I totally get, or it's playing checkers or candles in the bath. I do all of those things. They're all wonderful. And then it seems like number four is if you're not running, just ask why. Follow the answers, chase them down, whether they're the good or the bad. And if you run into where the money comes from or what else they're associated with, great. If it runs into their personality and where they come from, then that's even better and maybe a little more understandable, especially if it's something you don't agree with. Because like you said, there's no perfect candidate. We're never going to agree with everyone on every policy. Does that sum it up? Did I mangle that?
Yeah. And then I guess the last little caveat would be, even if you think that you don't have a voice, you do. And the way to have that voice now is to find candidates you like and send them whatever you can, $5, $10, $15, it doesn't matter. Just getting out there and showing that you're a real person and that you're pushing back against the huge big money backers, that actually is going to send a wake-up call, a tremendous wake-up call around the country and around the world. So get in there and whatever you can, even if it's just a dollar, find somebody who you believe in and support them, because it's kind of like rocket fuel when you do.
I love it. All right. We've got a bit of a lightning round and then we're out of here. First one, super important. Star Trek, Star Wars, or Doctor Who. And if it's Trek or just in general Trek, which one? And please don't say Enterprise. Go.
Oh, I don't get the cop out. No, actually I'm going to be very progressive here and say I love the new Star Trek Discovery.
Wait, so do I. It is so nice. Good.
It's amazing. Oh my God. I'm so excited. I cannot wait for Sunday.
You're caught up. I love the, I don't want to give anything away for anybody who's not watching. And it'll be a little bit till this airs, but I love what's going on. I thought the twist was crazy. Crazy pants. Didn't see it coming.
Yes. I mean, because there's one twist, you're like, yeah, we get that. But then there's another twist and you're like, what? So yeah.
But it explains so much.
Oh my God. I will tell you, it made my day the other day when Wilson Cruz started following me back on Twitter. He is Dr. Culber, that. And I was just happy that he is all healthy and everything is good with him in real life, because his character goes through some things. So
I know.
He is awesome. So, I mean, I love the cast. I love the story. I think at first I was like grumbling that I was going to have to pay for, seeing it through CBS's paywall, but now I'm like, whatever. Worth it, especially for this production value and this writing. Oh yeah, it's awesome.
Also, and this is why I've said to a number of my nerd friends who are the same way, you're like, oh, $6 a month. I'm like, you also get every back episode of Trek with that, which is just such a dangerous black hole.
Oh, really?
You get everything. Everything. Yeah, all of them.
$6. Good content costs money to make, Brian. Fork it over.
I'm not. Okay.
Jess, how do you consume the news yourself?
Ooh, voraciously. No, I have, on my phone, I have the NPR app and I have the BBC app, and, I have a subscription to the Washington Post. And, I we subscribe to LA Times now too. That's right. I've got LA Times and the Washington Post. And then I mean, I'm on social media all the time. So I also see things from all the different outlets on there. And then, I have friends who are journalists, and so I will check their specific feeds to see what they've written or what they're sharing, because they often have very good and relevant taste. So it's sort of a crowdsourced effort in a way.
Well, it seems to be the way to do it these days.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jess, I got one for you. Are you reading any books right now? And if so,
in all your free
they?
Time.
Ooh. Yeah, actually, I just finished the memoir Hunger by Roxane Gay. And it is about Roxane. She's a writer, and she's incredible. And it's about her struggles with sexual assault and then her subsequent overeating to the point of super morbid obesity to deal with that. And then her evolution
wow.
as a person and as a writer as a result. And it is an intense and amazing memoir. And I just finished it like 2 days ago. So I'm about to start another book, but I haven't decided which one yet. But that one was a fantastic read. So if people, you know, it's not light, it's not lighthearted.
Yeah.
I did also just finish, I read, I'm a voracious reader too, which helps with the news consumption, but I also just finished my fun book was The 14th Colony by Steve Barry. So historical nice. Action kind of stuff. Yeah. So people shooting things and planes and, you know, car chases and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Fun
so
to
yeah,
keep that
I kind of
balance
the serious yeah. sad with the like awesome action and adventure.
Sure.
Nice. And I know we've sort of talked about this because you're a avid athlete and a horse enthusiast. Is there anything, any other hobbies or anything that you do, not work related?
You know, we're doing a lot of DIY around our house. So
oh,
I've
cool.
become like this hobby DIYist, I guess. And so,
how serious
you know,
are we talking here?
Like building fences, building a barn for our the horses.
That's pretty serious.
You know, like, let me see, what did we do? We rewired parts
electrical?
Of our kitchen,
wow.
you know, electrically. We have a friend who's teaching us how to do the electrical uh-huh. stuff.
I was going to say, that one could come back to haunt you. That one could come and get you.
We sort of need you in
but
office,
no, but we're
Jeff.
You know, we're doing all this stuff, like putting new windows in our house. And, you know, just we're going to be doing, I just made a table. I made a table wow. over Christmas. Like, I got a piece of wood, just a slab of wood and sanded it and then varnished it and then drilled holes into the bottom of it and then made legs out of copper pipes and then epoxied them together and then made this three-legged table that is like from this beautiful piece of black walnut. So,
oh my God.
I don't know. I wanted to learn how to do it. So I did.
That's awesome. I feel I'm pretty handy, but I feel like if I made a table, my children would destroy it immediately.
Well, probably you
or
said
me,
five
honestly.
And what's the other one's age?
Oh my gosh. They're it's a lot. It's it seems like there's 12 of them. It's 5 and 3.5 and 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that is a lot. 'Cause 3 kids under 5 is like, that's like being constantly under siege. So good for you.
It is. It's good. I'm from a big family. I'm used to it, but, it is chaos. Every morning's kind of like, okay, here we go. Here we go. Shit, Jess, this has been awesome. We're
so awesome.
We're really excited to come knock on doors for you. Your website doesn't seem to have any merchandise. All I want to do is a hat or a...
We have stickers right now, and we're just about to do a whole t-shirt thing. So
if,
cool.
Yeah, we will buy t-shirts.
Mm-hmm. So we've got some really, we're doing a, like a logo design contest. That's what's going to be happening here. So
what? So we can
there will
enter?
Be, but oh, the Brian. Stickers, oh. We do have decals that we have that are like good for cars and laptops and things like that. But awesome. We're actually going to have a whole page with that stuff, like within the next week or two. So,
well,
that will be available.
Awesome. Well, by the time this airs, then that'll be up. So people can brand themselves.
Will that be on jess2018.com?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. Out of curiosity, have you been to jessphoenix.com?
I don't know. Have I? Let me look. I'm going to do it right now because I don't know
what
jessphoenix.com is.
I have in searching for you. It is a website and it's very pretty.
I just hope it's not porn.
No. Thank God.
Okay, I own volcanojess.com.
Yeah,
I
noticed
that's
that.
My like my website for like my non-Congress stuff.
Right.
Oh, it's pretty. Jessphoenix.com is really pretty.
Yeah,
she's
she loves
artist.
Flowers.
Huh.
And that's a nice little Jess, little shout out to the other Jess Phoenix.
Yeah, her stuff's really pretty. Oh man. Okay.
But we're very excited for your logo.
Yeah, I cannot paint. So if people see that, it is not me and I cannot paint.
Well, that's awesome. Okay. So Jess, 2018.com. What's your Twitter voice?
It is at Jess Phoenix 2018, 2018.
Awesome. And you are pretty active there. And people be a good human. You know, I mean, I think that's what most of our listeners hopefully are. Can't control them. Certainly not Brian, but be good humans. Hey. Don't be trolls. Awesome. Well, Jess, last thing, anything else you want to say to speak truth to power before we let you get out of here?
Just question everything. I mean, that's it. Question everything. And, you know, when people make decisions, ask them what they base it on, because that's really how you get to evidence-based policies. So, and, you know, of course, then there's be excellent to each other, but yes. That's a whole different thing.
So we're just, good.
I'm not even going to explain it. We'll see who gets that right. One. I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for what you're doing. It's exemplary and inspirational. And again, we're hoping to both support you and action, both environmental and otherwise, and also hopefully inspire other folks to support you and to get off their ass and do something themselves. So please keep kicking ass out there. We're going to be cheering for you up through the primary till November, and we're definitely going to come knock on doors to you. Brian might be on the way there.
Awesome. Well, I'm here, so awesome. I will be sitting here.
Anything else we can do, please let us know.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, great. Well, thank you both so much. This has been a pleasure, and I hope your listeners have enjoyed it, because it was fun for me.
Awesome.
I just want to bring it back to Voltron one more time and just say Voltron was the defender of the universe, and thank you for being a defender of our planet.
Nice. Good work, Brian. All right. Thanks, Jess. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
You too. Ciao.
Thanks to our incredible guest today. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this episode has made your commute or awesome workout or dishwashing or fucking dog walking late at night that much more pleasant. As a reminder, please subscribe to our free email newsletter at importantnotimportant.com. It is all the news most vital to our survival as a species.
And you can follow us all over the internet. You can find us on Twitter at importantnotimp. Just so weird. Also on Facebook and Instagram at importantnotimportant. Pinterest and Tumblr, the same thing. So check us out, follow us, share us, like us. You know the deal. And please subscribe to our show wherever you listen to things like this. And if you're really fucking awesome, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Keep the lights on. Thanks.
Please.
And you can find the show notes from today right in your little podcast player and at our website, importantnotimportant.com.
Thanks to the very awesome Tim Blaine for our jamming music, to all of you for listening, and finally, most importantly, to our moms for making us. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.